Thank you for coming to stormthecastle.com or castlefiction.com. This is the audio podcast of Lion's Last Kill, the epic fantasy novel. And you are listening to Chapter 7. He and Avram talked about many things for several hours. At first, they reminisced about their early adventures and some of their accomplishments. Then the conversation turned to some of the current problems that Avram faced. Eventually, they came around to Bosch's problem with the machine and the quest that they would embark on to see the Oracle. This is when Avram broke the bad news that he would not be going along, and this disappointed Bosch. He had never done anything without the help and companionship of the man. How can you not go along? This is the most important of all my quests. A sympathetic look came over Avram. I'm well into my 50s. Not as young as I used to be. I can't make the trip. It would be too arduous for me. I could make it to Hoth, but to climb up there to see the Oracle is impossible. For these past 10 years, I have spent too much time with the books. He waved his arms as if to present the library to an audience. And not enough time with the sword or in the hunt. With that, the conversation ended, and Bosch gathered himself to leave. They exchanged claps on the back, and at the door, Avram grabbed him by the shoulders and looked him straight in the eye. You be careful. Bosch only nodded his head, then left. Once he was outside and Avram had closed the door, he heard the big lock shift into place, and he looked around. It was close to midnight, and there were shadows everywhere, so instead of looking for his bodyguard, he just called out to him in a firm but quiet voice. You can come out. I have no problem with you being with me. And just like that, seemingly from nowhere, but from a shadow across the small cobblestone street, a figure stepped out and walked towards him. Bosch could have sworn that he had just looked into that dark spot, and there was nothing there, but he was mistaken. His bodyguard was right there. He looked him over as he took the 10 paces towards him. He had the same build as Bazeth, thin and whipcord-like, and he was wearing the same clothes with the funny metallic overjacket. And this caught his eye, because as the man had stepped out of the shadows, it seemed like the texture and color of the jacket had changed. It was very subtle, but it seemed to go from the black of the darkness to a lighter shade as he stepped out into the dim light of the street lanterns. His head was shaved clean, and he had a look of calm on his face. It was the same as Bazeth. Nothing would rattle this man. The calmest muscles were the muscles that could react the fastest, he thought to himself. And the same held true with the mind. A scared mind couldn't think straight, but a calm mind was a very powerful thing. The man came within 2 paces of Bosch and nodded his head slightly. Unlike most of the population, he wasn't rattled or awestruck by Bosch's presence. What's your name?
Grell.
Show me your tattoo.
The man rolled up the right sleeve of his tunic, just as Bazeth did, and Bosch looked at the tattoo of the worm swallowing its tail. The thing that most bothered him about this symbol was that it had a definite meaning. It was symbolic of the cycles of the universe. The snake swallows itself and everything turns in a perfect circle. What was will change, but what was will become again. This worried him. It could mean that the way this world was is the way it will be one day. Could this be a sign of resistance to the change? Could these men that are here to protect them, Petra and Avram, actually have a larger plan? This world was being swallowed up in the circles within circles. It was only natural that as their lives got more complex, that the game of subterfuge would develop and get more complex. Has it already developed into the state where you couldn't trust a man to be honest anymore? He swallowed hard at that thought. It looked like the innocence of this world is going, and he was to blame. When he brought them the ability to live a comfortable life, he gave them the time to plot and scheme. And in giving them the luxuries of time and things, he also gave them the desire for more. They say that when an animal gets the taste of human blood, it is never the same, and it has to be put down. Is that what he has done here? Has he given them the taste of human blood? The two of them walked side by side down the cobblestone streets. Neither had anything to say to the other. They both had their missions, and each was intent on seeing it completed. They head straight for the war room. Bosch knew that this was the most likely place to find Varga. It was the command center for any type of military preparations. and seeing as it had given them so little time to prepare for such an important and precarious expedition, that was where everything would be happening. He had no doubt that Varga had gone straight to the war room after he made his announcement of needing to see the Oracle, and he had no doubt that Varga probably hadn't slept at all yet. He would make plans and see that everything was in order before he even considered sleeping. Varga was a driven man in his own way. He took his position as head of the military very seriously. Bosch glanced over at Grell. The fact that Grell was by his side was testament to this fact. They made their way quickly through the near parts of the castle and up to the through several flights. The war room was to the southern part of the castle, and it took up almost one whole upper floor, and it was quite different from every other room. It had almost direct access to the outside. There were two sets of doors to it. The first set, considered the front doors, opened up into a large hallway in the castle, and the second set of doors were very large and very heavy. These led down a wide hall along the outer castle wall and poured directly into an enclosed courtyard that was a staging point for war. There were quarters for the line commanders and barracks for some of the more elite troops, the troops that could respond quickly to trouble. And there were also quarters for the common guard that kept watch over the castle and its surroundings in times of peace. This courtyard had one very large set of heavily fortified double doors that opened out into the surrounding countryside. It allowed for quick access of troops and equipment into the land. The castle was very complex with lots of rooms and corridors, and it took time to learn all of the various places in it. Some people never learned all of them, but the war room was very simple. It was quick access through one set of doors, one wide stairway, then into a staging courtyard, and through the large wooden doors to the outside. If all the doors were open, it could take a soldier less than a minute to go from the war room to the outside of the castle. Bosch and his bodyguard walked through the inner doors to the war room, uncontested. The guards at the doors stood straighter than normal at Bosch's appearance, and they didn't question Grell. The room was very large, easily 100 paces from the inner doors where Bosch stood to the other set of doors on the far end, and the room was 50 paces wide. But with all this space, it was still cramped with equipment, tables, soldiers, and all matter of military effects. Groups of soldiers pored over maps and lists spread out over tables. Varga would probably be at the main planning board, which acted as the control center for the war room, and that was at the far end near the other set of doors. The two of them entered the room and made their way through. Soldiers noticed him, but none said anything. The war room was not a place of military formality. There was no saluting or untoward greeting here. This was a place where decisions were made, decisions that held the weight of life and death in them. The war room was a very serious place. In the very center of the room were the two most interesting things, and the two pieces that Bosch liked the best. They were two tabletop dioramas. One, the larger of the two, was a big circular table that was 20 feet in diameter. He stopped at the edge of it and looked. It was a scale model of the land around the castle that extended for several miles. The castle was a very small structure the size of a thimble that sat exactly in the center. He pointed his finger at the thimble, then scribed a slow arc, following an imaginary path from the castle slowly through the farmlands south, then the grasslands, then his arm curved to the right, which was east, through the forest, and then into the beginning of the swamplands where it came to the end of the table. He continued scribing the arc with his arm for what he guessed was the appropriate length past the diorama where Mount Hawk lay. The diorama didn't show that much terrain. It was limited in its reach by the power of the screen stone that was built over it. He looked up at the ceiling. The screen stone was placed in the room above the war room, and it was suspended through a hole in the ceiling. It was about the size of an automobile and very heavy. It was the largest screen stone that the Screen Guild had ever sculpted, and it took 4 master craftsmen over a year to sculpt it. They sculpted it right in place in that room and from a platform in this room. This stone powered the diorama that he stood next to. He looked at the tabletop. Scattered in various areas around the castle were small flags. They were projections cast onto the surface of the scene from the stone above. Each one was the location of a person or a military unit, and each one carried a small screen stone that resonated with the large stone above. The size of the screen stone in the ceiling was the reason the map did not go all the way to Mount Hoch. The bigger the task, and the more area they needed to cover, the larger the screen stone had to be. And it was a geometrical progression. To get twice the coverage, the screen stone would have to be 4 times as massive. He bent over and examined the diorama more carefully. To the south of the castle, and the furthest from it, was a flag for the first scouting squad. The flag was orange with one diagonal white slash on it. This was a group of horse-mounted scouts. They were designed and outfitted for fast action. They had made their way fully south and had started what looked like the arc towards the east. They were probably scouting out the path he would take starting tomorrow. Another flag from the 1st Division was on this same path, but had made significantly less progress. It was orange, but it held two horizontal stripes. This was the quartermaster's crest, and it usually meant some type of supply convoy. He stared at the flag for several minutes, hoping to see its motion, but the scale was so radical that it was difficult to perceive motion, if they were moving at all. He turned and walked over to the other diorama. It was smaller, but much more complex. It was a beautifully built scale model of the castle itself, and in the same rectangular shape as the castle, and about 8 feet by 6 feet across. The screen cone above it was significantly smaller than the other one. It was about the size of a common house cat, and it was not suspended from the ceiling. It was perched several feet above the miniature castle on stilts that extended from the corners. He took a close look at the castle. It was very ornate and beautifully crafted, although it only showed the structure of the castle with each room an exact replica, but it held no furnishings or carpeting. You could reach in and take out a variety of the walls to observe intersections. Several sections of walls were removed to give a good look into the bowels and multiple layers of the castle. He thought that the addition of furnishings would have made a nice touch. It would have also made recognition of the various rooms easier. If you weren't very familiar with the layout of the castle, you couldn't tell which room was which. Furniture would have helped. Unlike the large diorama that had a few flags scattered about it in a projection from the screen stone above, this one had several dozen flags projected into the various rooms. He looked at one. It was a plain orange flag with one white dot on it. This was the commander of the 1st Division's flag. That would be Plexus, he thought. He was a good man, and he was currently in the kitchen, either eating or making preparations for the departure tomorrow. It was Plexus's scouts and quartermaster that were on their trek outside the castle. Plexus was a good man. He watched as Plexus's flag moved, and he smiled as it left the kitchen. Bosch knelt down and opened a large drawer under the diorama of the castle. It was lined with the soft red padding, and it held spaces for several dozen screen stones. These were the tracking stones that worked with the larger cat-sized stone above. These stones were assigned to various royalty and commanders, and in times of trouble or alert, like they were in now, each man carried his stone so he could be tracked around the castle. If he were leaving the castle, he would return it here. It wouldn't work outside the castle walls. When a mission was mounted outside the castle, it took one of the largest stones stored under the other diorama. These were the size of a man's head and weighed about 30 pounds, much larger because of the distance they could cover. Many spaces in the drawers were empty. Many of the screen stones were out, but his was right there in its slot at the upper left. He carefully took it out of its slot. It was about the size of a small pen flashlight, and it had a big blue flag inscribed on it. That was his flag, just a plain blue with no markings on it. He wouldn't need this tomorrow, so he placed it back in its slot and looked at the empty space beside it. When they built this drawer for the stones, they had left one space empty beside his. The inference was that if he ever took a wife, that was where her stone would go. It would be a blue flag with one curved line on it. This tradition of a wife's stone was saved for royalty, and although he wasn't technically royalty, they regarded him as some sort of a king, and they always awaited his announcement that Petra would be his wife, but that announcement had not come yet. He wasn't sure it would ever come. The Skrinn's Guild had probably already made her Skrinn's stone, and they just kept it tucked away in a safe place for now. He shut the drawer and finished his walk to the far end of the war room. Farger looked up at him from a mass of maps and papers that he and several officers were poring over. Bosch was surprised to see Plexus standing right beside Varga. He had made quick time from the kitchen. Or maybe it was because Bosch had spent so much time at the tabletop dioramas. The large double doors that led down the stairs into the courtyard out were open, and a breeze was blowing in. There was a slight shift in temperature near here. The doorway made a frame behind Varga and his commanders. Varga looked up, and seeing Bosch, he broke away from the table and walked over to intercept him. "How have you fared?" was the first thing that he asked Bosch, glancing only momentarily at Grell. The appearance of Grell probably had him concerned that maybe there had been an attempt on Bosch. He probably had explicit orders to stay hidden and unobtrusive. "I'm okay. Avram told me about what happened, so I assumed that you had placed a watch on me along with him and some others." He cocked his head at Grell, and Varga nodded his understanding. "Have you been resting?" "This journey will be fast and arduous." Bosch almost laughed at this. It was typical of Varga to ask how he was doing, and whether or not he had been resting, when he himself had probably not slept at all these past 2 nights. "I have rested, and I should be able to sleep tonight. How about you? Will you sleep tonight?" Bosch himself might have trouble sleeping from the anxiety of the journey they were taking, and this wasn't the same at Varga. He would have no anxiety. He would make plans the best of his ability and satisfied at that. But if that wasn't the case, then he would continue overseeing everything until it was right, up until the moment they left. Varga smiled at his question. "Let me brief you on what we have so far." He pointed at the large diorama of the land around the castle, and the three of them walked over to it. He pointed at the flag of the scouts' expedition. This was the flag that was the furthest from the castle. I had dispatched a small group of scouts from 1st Division within an hour of your arrival. They checked the route we will be taking. They have finished the southerly leg of the journey and have made the turn east. By the end of the day today, they will be into the forests. They will continue all the way to Mount Hoch and will wait for us there. The second flag here departed this morning. They are a supply, heavily armored and laden with a variety of things. They will continue on the same path through the forest and eventually arrive at the base of Hoch too, but not until after we have already started our ascent. This will allow us to travel lighter and faster. We will only need to bring supplies for the journey out and up to the mountain. We will resupply with them before returning. We will travel with one company of light cavalry, which is 20 horses, and we should make the journey, if all goes well, in about a week out. 5 days to get up and down the mountain, then a week back. The two of them stared at the tabletop, trying to see if there was something they were missing. They both knew that no war plan ever survived the firing of the first shot, and there were a lot of unknown variables in this journey. The Blight Beasts and the Breck had been very unpredictable in the past few years, and they had gotten significantly more organized. If they found out that something important was going on, and that Bosch himself was actually mounting an expedition to see the Oracle, they would be livid with their hate, and they would do something about it. The Breck were afraid of the Oracle, and never ever got within a few miles of Hoch, but there was no telling what they would do if they thought they had a chance to capture or kill Bosch. Before he had come, they had ruled this world with their terror and the hatred, and his coming had ruined their hold on everything, and they had been forced to live off the scraps of the world, slinking and sulking in the forests and swamps, and they no longer enjoyed human flesh, which it is believed to be their favorite food. And Bosch took all this away from them, and they knew it. Yes, it would be very dangerous business if they found out that he was in the swamplands or the forests with only a small entourage. They would be very motivated to meet him. Bosch spent the next several hours going over the details of the plans, but he didn't have much to add. They seemed well prepared, and everything seemed to be in order for the departure in the morning. By the end of the evening, the big speak stone that was sitting on the floor near the planning table came alive, and the group of scouts that had been sent out 2 days ago reported in. They had reached the edge of the forest as planned, and there had been no trouble at all. Their whole journey out there had been so far uneventful. But this was to be expected. If there was trouble to be found, it would start in the forest, and everyone in the room knew it. The scouting party was going to make an early night and set camp in the grasslands, and in the morning, they would start their trek into the forest. By midnight, Varga had announced that he was satisfied with everything. He announced he would make one last round in the courtyard downstairs to oversee the packing, then he would retire for a few hours of sleep. He suggested to his commanders that they all do the same. Several of them conferred with subordinates to ensure last-minute details were taken care of. Some soldiers would not sleep through that night in making sure everything was ready, but those that were departing in the morning would all get some restless sleep. They broke up their meeting, and Bosch headed out of the room, but he stopped and took one last look at the diorama of the land around the castle. He found the orange flag with the one diagonal slash on it. It was perched on the very edge of the land between the grasslands and the forest, and he knew that in the morning it would be well into the forest, and with that everything would change. He clenched his jaw and made his way out of the room and back through the castle for one last night with Petra, and it bothered him to think of it as one last night with her. He full well intended it not to be the last night. He had, in the past, he had given her far too many of those. This is the end of chapter 7. Thank you for listening. And make sure you tune in for chapter 8, where the journey across the land towards Mount Hoch and the Oracle begins.